Job chapter 4. God introduced us to Job as a man who, by God's statement, was a perfect and upright and one that feared God and eschewed evil. That wasn't Job's idea. It wasn't something that somebody said about him. God said that about Job. And as I pointed out earlier, what an amazing good thing for God to have say about somebody. I mean, if God said that about you or me, that would be just awesome. Job was an exceptional man. And Satan requested of God to allow him to torment Job. And he took away everything Job had except his wife, plagued his body with terrible, painful sores, and left him that way for months on end. We don't know how long, but throughout the text, we read several places where he mentions the months of his agony. So we know it wasn't just a couple of days or a few weeks, but it was a long period of time. And the bulk of the book describes those months of his suffering. And the redundant criticism from his three friends. Again and again and again, they criticized him. And as I approached this section, I thought, how do I deal with this? And I'll be honest, one day I spent a whole day, all day until dinner time in the evening, preparing a message on just chapter 4, 5, and 6. And then I thought, oh, this just isn't going to work. This just isn't going to work. And so the next day, I set that one aside, and I prepared tonight's message. And we're going to cover chapters 4 to 27. And that's a lot of material, but the reason I'm doing it this way is because there's so much redundancy. It's again and again and again the same things. And each time Eliphaz talks, you could basically say the same thing. They're beating on Job over the same things. And so we're going to look at a summary of these things. And what I would recommend that I think would be good, and I'm going to try to keep a copy of this for myself, but you could download these notes. And next time you read through the book of Job, read the summary and then read those chapters. And it'll be a help to you to be able to understand what's going on so you can kind of put it together. Because the book of Job is written in a poetic form, and that makes it more complicated to read, more complicated to understand, because it's the Hebrew poetry, and it just is, it doesn't flow like a story. And so it does make it more complicated. So this evening, as we look at this, I want to give a brief summary of these criticisms against Job and Job's rebuttal to them, and then I want to show you some principles that we can gain from all of this. And so, take your Bible and get ready to move. We got a lot of territory to cover. I'm not going to read all of it, obviously. That would take longer than our time. But Eliphaz starts speaking in chapter 4. And chapters 4 and 5 is Eliphaz speaking. Now, he was probably the oldest. He was the first speaker in speaking to Job here. And he got after Job. He said, Job, you are not practicing what you taught. He said, you told people to respond one way and you're responding the other way. Well, that's probably not true. But he was saying, you know, you told people, you know, when they're having problems to just be strong and all this. And he says, you're not doing that. And so he picks on Job there. And then he says that innocent and righteous people do not perish. Now, that's not true. We know that. That's not true. But this is what he's saying. He said, the innocent and righteous people, they're not going to perish. And then he brings in the principle of sowing and reaping. And he says, because there's a principle of sowing and reaping, what you sow, you're going to reap. So therefore, Job, if you're reaping bad things, obviously you sowed bad things. So quit saying you didn't sin. And so he's picking on Job, said you've sinned against God. You need to admit it. And then he talks about thorns and robbers ruining a fool's harvest. And so he's saying, you're this fool that's getting this harvest, and you've been robbed of the good things because of who you are. And all affliction and trouble have caused this trouble that you have. All affliction and trouble have a cause behind them. And the cause behind them is your sin. All right? And so he says, Job, what you need to do is you need to seek God and stop despising God's chastening. He says, God's trying to chasten you. You need to stop despising his chastening and accept it, and then God will bless you if you'll do that. If you'll repent, God will bless you. Because everybody that does right, God blesses. And so he's got this wrong philosophy. He's just saying, you do right and God will automatically bless you. You do wrong and God will automatically judge you. And so this is how he comes across to Job. Now, in chapter 6 and 7, Job gives his rebuttal. And in chapter 6, he says there that you underestimate my grief. He starts out there just saying, my grief is far greater than you know. Verse number 2, oh, that my grief were thoroughly weighed and my calamity laid in the balances together. He said, if you could weigh how heavy this is, he says in verse 3, it's heavier than the sands of the sea. He says, I am swallowed up by this. It's tormenting me. And you don't understand that. You're underestimating my problems. And he goes on to share with them that they do not grasp the despair that he is in as he describes his despair and his discouragement. And he says, you lack empathy. You know, that is one of the things that many times we struggle with. We often lack empathy toward other people. Somebody's going through a really hard time and we have this feeling like, come on, grow up. You'll be all right. It's not that bad. And we lack empathy. We aren't there. We're not in their shoes. We don't know what they're going through. We don't know the torment that they're going through. And so we must be careful about that. And so Job reminds them of this. And he says, you have no evidence that I have sinned. You keep saying I've sinned, but you don't have any evidence of that. You haven't told me anything that I have done. And so he says, stop accusing me falsely. And he says, I feel that I have no more hope than a slave. You know, a slave, you think about it, a slave's life, what hope did he ever have of anything good turning out in his life? He was owned by somebody else. They told him what to do, told him when to get up, when to go to bed, what to eat, and what to do. And he had no say in anything. He said, I don't feel any more hope than a slave does. He said, I just feel hopeless and despair. And then he told God. He said, God, toward the end of 7, he says, God, I have sinned. You know, and many translations put it as, I might have sinned or I may have sinned, but it actually says, I have sinned. So whether Job is actually saying, God, I have sinned, he doesn't mention what he did. He just said, and my thinking is, Job must be saying, God, I guess I've sinned. So tell me what I've done so I can get it right and you can forgive me. That was his attitude. He says, I don't know that I've done anything wrong, but God, I guess I sinned. And so please forgive me. And so Job is in despair. He's begging God for help and forgiveness. So this is I need to stop a moment. There's actually two cycles or two rounds. Or sorry, not two, three rounds of this, of these friends attacking him. So Zophar, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar all attack him one time. And then the second round comes. And they do it again. And then the third time comes, and the first two do it. The last one, Zophar, didn't do it the third time. Now, whether these three rounds were back-to-back, or whether they were, you know, maybe the guys all went home for a few weeks and came back to see Job and hit him again, I don't know. I don't know. And the fact that his torment lasted for months, did those guys sit there the whole time for months, watching him rot on this, you know, garbage pile, and just, you know, it wouldn't take months to say all the stuff they said. So I kind of suspect that maybe they gave him round one, and then they said, oh, you know, let's just go home for a while, and we'll come back and see him in a month or so, and came back. I don't know. That's only a guess. You can come up with your own theory on that, but that is a possibility. But then, so Eliphaz talked, and then the second guy, Bildad, he comes on, and he says, history confirms that God is just, and calamity is punishment for sin. He gives historical reasons. He says, all right, we know this is true. This is what always happens, that God is just and God always judges sin. And it's punishment for your sin. And so you need to get right with God. And then in your latter end, you will greatly increase. If you'll get right with God, but you can't have that unless you get right with God. And he says, God will not cast away a perfect man, nor will he help the evildoers. Again, these are generalities that aren't even true. And they're blasting this at Job. So Job comes back at him in chapter 9 and 10. And in these two chapters, Job begins with a question that we could answer better than he could. Look at verse number 2 of chapter 9. He says, I know it is It is so of a truth. But how should man be just with God? How should man be just with God? Well, I say we can answer that question better than he could, because now we're looking back at the cross. Christ has already paid the redemption. He's paid the debt for our sin. He's provided the way of forgiveness. Job was looking forward to something, and he didn't even really see the whole picture. All he knew is that there's redemption with God. He didn't know anything about the cross. He didn't know anything about the resurrection. But he was looking forward to the time when God would deal with things in a right and just way. So he asked this question, and then as we think on that, Job responds by affirming God's wisdom and power. He denies that tradition is a good source for knowledge. So these other guys were saying, you know, you just follow the tradition. And Job says, no, that's not a good source of knowledge. And God, he says, God reveals much about himself in nature. And that is true. You can look around in nature and you see a lot about God. I mean, there's probably more that we see about God in nature than just about any other area other than just what we see in the scriptures. Because you look in nature, and how people can look at nature and just say, well, it just happened. I thought, you know, that doesn't make any sense. Melody was saying just yesterday, we were talking, the last time we were, one of the times we were at the chiropractor, he was telling her about all the intricate details of muscles and bones and tendons in your wrist. And she said, I should have just told him, yeah, that's because God made it that way. But she said, didn't think of that at the time. But you know, isn't that true? You look at the nature, the thing, the way God made us. There's so many details that just describe for us the greatness of God. And so Job's talking about this. Job also mentions there that he longed for a daysman. Now, a daysman was a mediator, somebody to stand between him and God and just sort these things out and to be able to set things right. And he longed for that in chapter 9, verse 33. And Job cannot identify any sin that would cause God to punish him. And again, he in despair, he cries out to God in the end of chapter 10. He says, God, just take my life. I want to die. And I want to die. And, you know, I apologize we're not looking at individual verses, but we just got so much territory to cover that I can't. So these general notes, if you read one of those things and then, you know, it talks about the two chapters and then you read those two chapters, you'd be able to put it together and it'll help you. Then after he'd done talking or answering Bildad, then Zophar speaks up for the first time. And Zophar, he's probably younger. He was much more blunt than his two friends. And Zophar flat out calls Job a liar. He says, you're a liar. And he says, obviously, you're suffering because of sin. So you need to just get right with God, and it'll be okay. So he's just real blunt with him, and didn't say a whole lot, but he was just very unkind and blunt with Job, and just laying it all on Job. And Job responds, he rebuked his friends and defended his righteousness, and then he appealed to God rather than to his unkind friends. He says, you know, God, you've got to help me. These guys aren't helping me at all. And he calls his friends liars and makes and the speakers of wickedness and deceit. He says they're lying and they're speaking wickedness, they're speaking deceit. It's not true what they're saying. Ryrie in his study notes. And by the way, if you ever want to buy a study Bible, even if you want just one for your office, Ryrie's study Bible is really good. It's got lots of really, really good notes in it. And he covers a lot of stuff in the book of Proverbs. But anyway, Ryrie said here, in his despair, Job claims that the fate of a tree is better than the fate of man, since the tree can sprout again. My neighbor bought it a month ago, cut down a noxious tree that was next to our fence and on his side. And he left about a meter of it sticking out of the ground yet. Well, it's all covered with leaves now. It's all growing again. So hopefully he'll catch on and realize he's got to cut it down closer than that and then stand over it with a club and beat them to death until when they come up. But anyway, a tree will sprout again. He says, that's not the way it was man. I mean, trees got better off than we are. He says, when you die, you're dead. All right? So he's defending himself against these guys. So that's round one. Now, round two, they start again. So Eliphaz comes back on, and they follow the same cycle each time. And Eliphaz, in chapter 15, then accuses Job of empty talk, ignoring ancient wisdom, and he is like the wicked because he is in distress. he once again says, you're in distress, so quit denying it. You are guilty. You're wicked. You just need to admit it, because that's why you're in distress. You wouldn't be in distress if you weren't. And so he just, again, he's just picking on Job in these ways. And these were supposed to be guys that would be his friend. You know, as we think about this, and I'll summarize some of this toward the end, but don't forget, when we're trying to be a comfort and encouragement to someone who's in distress, this is not the way to do it. They don't need somebody bashing on them and telling them all the things they've done wrong and blaming them with sin and accusing them. That's not going to help them at all. Even if it happened to be true, it's not going to help them any. They need some encouragement at that time. And Job's friends were not giving that to him at all. And Job responds in chapter 16 and 17, and he rebukes his mockers. And he knew that it was God who allowed his sorrow, but he knew not why. He says, I know that God has allowed this, but I don't know why. And he couldn't figure that out. He felt even more hopeless. You know, when someone is bombarded like this with torment, and he's trying to think, what did I do, God? Why are you doing this? Why won't you back off? Why won't you relieve me? I've been this way for months. It's tormenting me. I wish I was dead. What's wrong? God, what is taking place? And he was feeling more and more hopeless. He's just saying, I want it over. I feel terrible. And he was having a terrible time. Then Bildad comes on with his next comments. And he rebukes Job for his arrogant words about them. And then he affirms that the wicked, like Job, are weakened, ensnared, diseased, insincere, forgotten, hated, and alone. He says, you know, Job, this just describes you. You're one of these bad guys. You need to just get right with God. They're constantly beating on Job like that. And then Job responds to him in chapter 19. He says he complained about his friends. And then he turns to God and he complained about God treating him harshly. You know, as we work our way through this, we find that Job, he hadn't sinned. Sin wasn't the cause of all this, but he was having a hard time keeping a good attitude. And we can understand why. And here Job, he's getting beat on by his friends, and he's in agony with his torments. And now he starts saying, well, God, you know, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? Why are you treating me so harshly? And he begged for pity. And his hope seems to be revived, though, in toward the end, verse number 25 of chapter 19. Chapter 19, verse number 25. He says there, for I know that my Redeemer liveth, and that he shall stand in the latter day upon the earth. You know, that is an amazing statement, to think that Job had that kind of discernment about God. I mean, remember, Job was way back probably in the days of Abraham. He didn't even have any of the Bible yet, except what was passed on just from tradition and, you know, things of that nature. And yet he has a good understanding of God and his redemption that God was going to provide. Zophar, then the third guy, the young fellow, he comes, oh, I don't know how young, but he was probably younger than the other two. He came on in chapter 20, and he accused Job of being a hypocrite who would perish. And he accused Job of oppressing the poor, but he gave no evidence of what he was talking about. And he was sure that the heavens would reveal Job's iniquity. I mean, he's just really coming down on Job in all of these ways. And they're just, all of them are working together and saying, Job, you're guilty. Admit it, you're guilty. And see, this is why I decided to put it all together, because otherwise we were going to have 8 weeks of me saying the same thing each time. And I thought, you know, that's going to be tough. I thought, well, I don't think we're going to want that. And say, oh, I'm not going to go tonight. I know what he's going to say. All right? And so we're putting it all together so you can see it all in one lump sum here. And we can summarize it, and it'll help it to digest better. All right? So then Job, then, in chapter 21, he says, God does not always judge the wicked as these men claimed. All right? Now, they were saying God judges the wicked, and he blesses the good guys. And Job says it doesn't always happen that way. And we know that to be true. The wicked sometimes die without struggle. And many evil men escape punishment and live on. And you think, why? I mean, these guys are wicked. They're bad. They just seem to escape judgment. They, you know, even some people, they'll go to court and they figure out slick ways of getting out of trouble and they're off free. And you think, this just doesn't seem to be fair. And that is true in life. And that's just the way life is. So Job's identifying these things and saying, that's not the way it always works. It doesn't always work the way you're saying it. That ends round two. Then round three begins in chapter 22. Chapter 22, and again, Eliphaz comes back on. And here Eliphaz, he again instructs Job on God's ways. He says, this is the way God is. And sometimes some of the stuff he says is right. Right? And, you know, that's one of the things we need to be very careful about when you're quoting from the book of Job. It's tough to quote from the book of Job because much of the book of Job is written by his friends that were, you know, very questionable at best. And so some of the stuff they said was true, but a lot of the stuff they said was out of context or was twisted. And so be careful when you're quoting from these guys. Make sure you're quoting something that's actually right. And even some of Job's comments weren't always right on because he was frustrated too and he was hurting and complaining and having a difficult time. So, you know, there's good verses in the book of Job, but we do need to be careful how we quote from it. But Job here, he longed for God. He longed for God to defend his innocence. And then he admitted that God was fulfilling his will for his life. You know, that was an important admission. Job says, I know God's doing what he chose to do in my life. I don't understand it, but I know it's God that's doing it. And Job notes that many people sin, but God does not have a fixed time for punishment. And that's true. God doesn't have a fixed time for punishment. God will deal with them in his time. And there are some people that live out their whole life in this world living wicked lives, and they seem to get away with it. But they're going to stand before God one day, and it'll be settled. Other people, they seem to get in trouble. They end up in big trouble. They get, you know, executed or whatever the case may be for their wickedness. And it seems like, yeah, they got what they deserved right away. But it's not always that way. And the truth of the matter is, God knows deep down inside and the heart of men and what's going on. And so God will deal with things in his good timing. Bildad then comes back on. And because, he says, because God is great and you are a sinner, you cannot be justified with God. They just won't back off on this. They're convinced in their hearts that Job, even though he was their friend before, I don't know how good of a friend he was now, but he had been their friend, and they kept saying, Job, you can't get away with sin because God's punishing you now. Obviously, you are a sinner. And you know, I think in my own heart, I have an idea that these guys were probably jealous of Job before. Job was the most wealthy man, the most popular man. Everybody knew Job. He was, you know, the person that everybody wanted to be like. And now Job's brought down to this point of misery, and they're thinking, finally getting what he deserves here. We've wanted to be like him, and he's never, you know, we can't ever reach to that point. I don't know what's going on in their minds, but they're obviously taking it out on Job. And Job's having a very difficult time with it, but they continue to bash on him about his supposed sin. And Job responds in chapter 26 and 27. He says, he assures his friends that he already knew that God was great. And he says, the wicked do not always prosper. And he affirmed his innocence once again. And he addressed his friends now as enemies. He called them his enemies. And Job agrees that God will punish the wicked. Job's not denying that. Yes, the wicked will be punished. But I'm not one of them. I didn't do the things you're accusing me of. I did not sin against God. And, you know, Job wasn't saying that he was absolutely sinless and he'd never, you know, done anything wrong. But he said, I've never done anything that God would do this to me for. And I've always dealt with it. You know, that's a great thing too. Job was a man who was very quick to sacrifice and deal with sin. Remember, even with his children, he said, I'm going to sacrifice a special one after every one of their birthday parties, just in case one of them sin. I'm going to have the special sacrifice to cover them just in case. And if he did that for his children, you know he did it for himself. And so Job was a person who, whenever he had done wrong, he got right with God, got it settled, and he kept short accounts with God. And that's really what we need to do as well. So Job was doing what's right, and he said, God, if I've missed something, if I forgot something, tell me, but I can't think of anything that I've done that I didn't deal with. God, please, open my eyes and help me. And so, this takes us up to the end of chapter 27. Chapter 28 to 31, I was going to cover that as well, but that's kind of a conclusion that Job puts some more things in. Probably next week we'll dig into that. It's a conclusion that Job has after his talks with all these guys. And then after that, he's followed by the conversation of this next young fellow that comes on. And that's an unusual one, because I say that, and I'll talk more about that later, but this other young fellow that comes on and bashes him for 2-3 chapters, God never rebuked him. God rebuked his 3 friends, but said nothing about this other guy. And I'm thinking, I wonder why. You know, anyway, we'll get to that when we get there. So what's some principles we can learn from all this? All right, this is really what we need. This is, when you look at the book of Job, these are some of the things, and there's probably a lot more, but these are a few that will help us to think on it. Number one, some principles from Job's friends. We must not assume that bad things only happen to bad people. We live in a sin-cursed world. Bad things don't just happen to bad people. This sin-cursed world we live in, we will face bad things too, even if we haven't done anything necessarily wrong. You know, when good people have children that die, good people have accidents, good people have disasters happen to them, and maybe they can't think of anything they've done. And many times it was not because they sinned against God. Just bad things happen to good people and bad things happen to bad people because we live in a sin-cursed world. And then also, it is not true that God always punishes bad people right away. You can go back to Psalm 73. As Asaph was struggling with that, he says, I'm upset. I don't understand. The good guys, you know, the bad guys have good things happen to them, and the good guys have bad things happen to them. Doesn't seem fair. And he said, I was just about ready to give up on all this until I went into the temple and I remembered the end. And I'm paraphrasing. He just said, I went in there and God reminded me, it's not the end yet. They're going to all stand before me one day, and I'll make a reckoning with them. I'll settle the score. And you'll spend eternity with me in heaven, and they're going to spend eternity in hell. So it's not over yet. And so a good thing to remember when we start feeling that way. And then another principle is that we cannot see the hearts nor motives of others. No matter how much we may think we know them, we can't see their hearts and their motives. And therefore, we need to be careful what we accuse them of, because we just don't know. And, I mean, if they blatantly said what they did and it was wrong, then obviously they've admitted it. But many times we tend to accuse people of things that we have no legitimate argument against them because we don't know their hearts. Then another principle, the truth of God's word always trumps the opinions of man. The truth of the Bible always comes on top. It's always right. Men are wrong. God is right. And we should never forget that. Now some principles from Job. We must seek to empathize with those who are suffering rather than attacking them. They need our pity, not our punishment. And that can be a big help to us. Remember the verse that we've paraphrased into doing to others as you'd have them do unto you, Matthew 7:12. Jesus said, therefore, all things whatsoever you would that men should do to you, do even so to them, for this is the law and the prophets. If we always did to others what we wanted them to do to us, we would treat them in a way that would be empathetically nice, and we pity them more than we do. Another principle, sin is not the only reason that trials afflict Christians. While we ought to probe our hearts for sin during trials, we must not assume that this is God's motive. Okay? We cannot assume, even when trials come into our lives, yes, I think it's the right thing to say, oh God, you know, this problem's coming on. Have I done something? Are you trying to get my attention? Did I do something that offended you? Yes, it's a wise idea to examine our heart. But if God doesn't reveal anything that we've done, then we need to assume that maybe it wasn't. And remember the Apostle Paul, when he said, Lord, would you please take away the thorn in my flesh? And God said, no. He said there in 2 Corinthians 12:9, he says, and he said unto me, my grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. And that is a great verse to remind ourselves of. God's strength is made perfect in our weakness. And sometimes God allows trials just for that reason, so that we'll depend on Him. Because we're so independent. And God wants us to depend on Him. Another one is, while God often leaves us in the dark as to why trials and afflictions come our way, God always knows and has a good reason. God always knows and has a good reason. Reminds me of that song that Ron Hamilton wrote called Rejoice in the Lord. If you don't know that song, look it up and listen to it. The first line goes, God never moves without purpose and plan when trying a servant and molding a man. It's a great song, and Ron Hamilton wrote that after he had his eye removed from cancer surgery. And God gave him this song. And it's an amazing song. It's a great encouragement. So, again, it's called Rejoice in the Lord by Ron Hamilton. If you're not familiar with it, Google it and listen to it. Another principle is, those suffering often feel hopeless. It is comforting for us to seek to give them hope, either temporal or eternal, to offer them hope. Revelation chapter 21, verse 4 says, and God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things will pass away. I mean, if you can't offer them any other hope, offer them that one. It'll all be over one day. Someday it's going to be taken care of, and God will wipe it all away, and we'll have peace and joy for eternity. It's not going to have to be eternal. And then one last one. Job looked for the Redeemer's for his hope. And instead of focusing on our woes, we ought to focus on God's character and His promises. Psalm 56:3, our memory verse, what time I'm afraid, I will trust in Thee. And if we'll do that, it'll help us through these trials. And you know, these are things I need to apply. I'm not just preaching to you, I'm telling myself, I got to do this. And it's something you got to remind yourself of regularly, because we forget so quickly. But the book of Job really is a help to us if we'll just take a look at this and realize what is taking place there. So, again, I encourage you to download the notes and just have them there as you study the book. You can read through each one of the little sections before you read the chapters, and I think it'll be a help to you. And I trust that it'll be an encouragement to you. And when a friend is suffering, seek to be empathetic. An empathetic comforter, not a painful critic. They don't need painful critics. And then when you are suffering, or when I am suffering, we need to focus on the Lord, count our blessings, rejoice in the Lord, cast our burdens on the Lord, meditate on comforting scriptures. And though it's not easy, we know that's the right thing to do.